This episode is sponsored by Noom. If you're like me, you may have seen a lot online about GLP-1 medication. Noom is a leader in behavior change weight loss, and they now offer Noom GLP-1, a compounded semaglutide. Noom GLP-1 is affordable. It starts at only $149. I feel like a lot of people think these type of medications may be out of their reach financially, but Noom offer a very affordable option at $149. For those that qualify, Noom GLP-1 is available and ships to your door in 7 days. Noom combines their proven weight loss program with GLP-1 so that you can lose weight and keep it off, which I know sometimes you can lose the weight. It's always hard to keep it off, but Noom's GLP-1s can really help with that. Noom GLP-1 comes with Companion, which is your guide to better and more sustainable GLP-1 weight loss, which is so helpful.
With Noom GLP-1, you get access to a doctor, a coach, and a supportive community all from within the app on your phone. Ask your care team anything and get support with medication and side effect management. Noom GLP-1 starts at $149 and is delivered to your door in 7 days. Start your GLP-1 journey today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. Noom, the smart way to lose weight. Disclaimer, not all customers will medically qualify for prescription medications. Compounded medications are not reviewed by the FDA for safety, efficacy, or quality.
Military veterans and active duty service members, you could become a certified cyber warrior with just 12 weeks of training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, and IT pros with these skills often enjoy abundant opportunity and a great lifestyle. Protect our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. SkillBridge and other VA benefits are available to those who qualify. Learn more at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP. That's mycomputercareer.edu/CWP.
The True Crime Society podcast contains adult themes and violence and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. And if you'd like to skip the intro or move to any specific part of the podcast, please refer to the timestamps listed in the episode description. Thank you. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the True Crime Society podcast with Stephanie and Olivia. It is February 20th right now. See, like, February's already almost over. Well, yes, it is short, but, like, we're already on day 20 of February.
It's crazy because it's only, like, a few days shorter than most months, but it does seem to fly by really extra quick just because, you know, it's, you know, you get that little bit off of the month.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to winter ending here, even though everything's like, oh, March is still going to be wintry. The groundhogs are saying it's going to be winter forever. Everything's saying it's going to be winter forever, but I'm sick of it. I'm so sick of it. I always say I like winter through the holiday time when it feels appropriate. But then January, February, and March, hit or miss, are just so gray, cold, boring, miserable. We've gotten like more snow than we have the last couple of years. We haven't had any huge storms where we've gotten more than like 4 inches, but we've had a lot of ice storms and just it's been so cold. My driveway, there was one storm recently where it was like icing and then it rained a lot and then overnight it froze. So we tried to get as much off the driveway as we could, but it was hard because it was literally just water, like it was raining and it all froze. So now my driveway is just solid ice. We've tried, like, you can't shovel it. So we tried, like, chipping away at it. We've salted it. It's just, I need it to melt. I just need it to get a little warmer and melt because I'm sick of being like, okay, don't slip, don't slip, don't slip.
How annoying.
Yeah, it's the worst. Have you ever had to clean a car off of snow? I know you've lived other places.
No, like, no. Well, because when I lived in other places, we didn't have a car either. Like, so no, I've never had to. Like, occasionally here, there'll be ice on the windscreen of my car after a really cold night, but we just, like, turn the hose on and it comes off. It's not, like, thick ice or anything like that. It's just, like, icicles, I guess.
Yeah, cleaning off your car, I try to do it, especially if it's the weekend, I'll try to do it before Monday, but in the morning, I'm pretty much always running late to begin with. And then I'm like, my car, even if I start it and with the heat on, it's not enough to get it all off. I've started using a broom just to push all the snow off because I have a SUV. So to get it off the roof is really hard. So I use a broom to like push it all off. But then when it's icy too, it's so hard. It's the worst.
No. Like, I hate winter here, but it definitely doesn't get that cold. Where I live is like a valley, and I was saying to you this morning, I went for a walk and I can tell that summer's coming to an end because the light on the street was different, because in winter we don't get a whole lot of direct sunlight every day. It's like a lot colder and grayer and all that stuff. So usually when I go for a walk in summer, it's super light, but when I went at 8:30 this morning, I'm like, oh, I can tell it's coming to an end. The light's changing.
We're switching.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
We did have an extra cold snap, like a random cold snap this week where it was actually cold. We had to wear jumpers and sweatpants, but it lasted for 2 days. But it was actually really, really nice. I wish it could just be like that, hot all the time and then occasionally a cold day, just so it's like refreshing. Because I like autumn is all right, fall is all right, but winter I'm just not into. It's too cold.
Yeah, I'm fine with like every season, even winter, like I said, up till Christmas time. But just the January, the first quarter of the month, of course, my birthday and Mike's birthdays are in that time. Just the worst time. Because I'm also, like I said, we've had a lot of like snowy, icy times, but not any big storms where like I even could get off of work or something. So if you're going to give me all this snow and ice, at least give me one big exciting snow event where it's like, oh my God, 2 feet of snow. We can't go to work. Like, what are we going to do?
Doesn't happen.
I love the panic of a storm coming, whether it's big thunderstorms or big snowstorms. Granted, I don't live in an area where it's like we get crazy hurricanes or tornadoes or anything, like where I have to actually be afraid. So whenever we have a big storm, it's more like kind of exciting. But it's been just boringness, boring, gray, miserable.
When you were talking about storms, I feel like February, for me, I generally recall it being a very stormy month. February seems more hot and humid, but we haven't had as many this year. Like I feel like December, we probably had a few more storms. Maybe it peaked early this year. This season.
We've also had a lot of crazy wind, which is never fun because my house, for some reason, I don't know if it's just the way it's positioned or just somehow the way, or the windows maybe, the way the wind hits the house, it like howls. Like the wind's not howling outside, but up against the house and in the house, it sounds like it's howling. It's so scary. I hate it.
Our house backs onto like the bush, which is the woods for you. And there's some really, really, really tall eucalyptus trees. And the other day it was dead silent at home and I heard a tree fall. I'm like, oh my gosh. But the woods are so thick. I can't see where the tree fell, but it was so loud. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh my gosh, it must be right near the house. But yeah, crazy.
Yeah. Falling trees are definitely scary.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so obviously, like, we record here Friday morning, so it's not too long after I wake up. Like, I get up, drop the kids, and then come back and record. But last night I was dreaming about the podcast, and it was the most random dream. Like, I knew we had to record, but I had a wedding the same day, but I wasn't recording with you, even though it was you, but it was my cousin. It was so weird. And then, like, we're trying to set up, and then my microphone wouldn't work, and I could just, like, kept looking at my watch, like, we need to leave for the wedding at 2, and what's going on? Like, it was just so random. Like, I would love to know how the mind works when you're asleep, and like why put those things together.
Like, obviously it's like just stress though. It's like the dream that you have like when you're in school where like you can't remember your locker combination, you can't remember your schedule, you can't remember where your classroom is. Just like dumb stress dreams. Whose wedding were you going to? Was it yours?
I don't know. I don't even remember but like I remember it's like, can you set up the computer? I'm just trying to get organized. And like she set it up and she set it up wrong because she didn't know how to do it. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
You're like, oh my God, the wedding. Funny.
This episode is sponsored by Noom. If you're like me, you may have seen a lot online about GLP-1 medication. Noom is a leader in behavior change weight loss, and they now offer Noom GLP-1, a compounded semaglutide. Noom GLP-1 is affordable. It starts at only $149. I feel like a lot of people think these type of medications may be out of their reach financially, but Noom offer a very affordable option at $149. For those that qualify, Noom GLP-1 is available and ships to your door in 7 days. Noom combines their proven weight loss program with GLP-1 so that you can lose weight and keep it off, which I know sometimes you can lose the weight. It's always hard to keep it off, but Noom's GLP-1s can really help with that. Noom GLP-1 comes with Companion, which is your guide to better and more sustainable GLP-1 weight loss, which is so helpful.
With Noom GLP-1, you get access to a doctor, a coach, and a supportive community all from within the app on your phone. Ask your care team anything and get support with medication and side effect management. Noom GLP-1 starts at $149 and is delivered to your door in 7 days. Start your GLP-1 journey today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. Noom, the smart way to lose weight. Disclaimer, not all customers will medically qualify for prescription medications. Compounded medications are not reviewed by the FDA for safety, efficacy, or quality.
Hey, are you looking for a true crime podcast to binge?
Check out True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everyone's talking about.
We've been one of the top true crime podcasts for almost 9 years.
And we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone is talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so today we're going to be talking about the case of Evelyn Boswell. It's actually one of the first episodes we did, probably. We did in September 2020. So, I mean, we started March-ish 2020, so still pretty early on.
We were very sporadic then, too. Like, we'd have a lot of time off.
Oh, yeah, we only did, like, every other week.
Yeah, and I feel like we even had, like, a few weeks off here and there. So, yeah, it was definitely one of our very, very early episodes.
Yeah. So since it's such an old episode, and because the trial just happened and Evelyn's mother, Megan, ended up being convicted of her murder, we're just going to redo the whole thing, go through the whole case, because we'd rather you guys listen to a newer episode with all the details versus one of our old first ones where we probably sound like dweebs. So a lot of people did message us asking us to cover this one. We were just saying on Patreon, some people are like, why are you doing so many kid cases? I don't know. You guys ask for them.
Yeah. And I feel like sometimes, like, when I do the notes, I try and do something different each week. And I honestly didn't realize that we had a lot of kid cases in a row. Like, we did Lyric, and they were all very different. Like, we did Lyric and Elizabeth, and we did Daniel Morecambe.
Yeah, they're, like, different types.
Yeah. And I think we did a Mums Who Murder one. So, obviously, that's about kids. But anyway, we are aware that we have covered a lot of child cases lately. So, we will make an effort to move away from that after this for a little while.
Yeah, we'll do a break. We'll do some adults only.
Yeah.
And obviously, this case is going to go into some details about the murder and death and child abuse of Evelyn. So, just be warned that some of it is a little graphic. It's not like horribly graphic, but it is very sad.
During the trial, they went into quite a lot of detail about how she likely died. So
her body was found. So
yeah.
So just be warned.
The death of little Evelyn Boswell is a story of lies, false starts, accusations, and abandonment. Family members first reported the 15-month-old missing in February 2020. Her grandfather said he'd last seen her 2 months before, in December. That set off a fruitless 2-week search for her, started on the 19th when the TBI launched an Amber Alert. The alert listed a gray BMW as carrying suspects linked to the case. 2 days later, authorities found the car and arrested Evelyn's grandmother, Angela, with her boyfriend in Wilkes County, North Carolina. That same day, Megan Boswell, Evelyn's 18-year-old mother, spoke with our sister station, WCYB. Why didn't she report her daughter missing earlier?
Well, the reason I didn't report it or anything is because I knew the person who had her, and I didn't want them to run away with her. And as soon as they thought anything was going on, they just kind of vanished.
On February 23rd, 2020, the TBI said Boswell claimed her mother had given Evelyn to an unknown person, saying she was safe and would have a better life. Then on the 25th, another story. She told investigators Evelyn died when she or her boyfriend rolled over on her in bed. She said she didn't know where her child's body was. Police arrested Megan Boswell and charged her with false reporting. Then on March 6th, a key break, the TBI announced human remains had been found on a Boswell family member's property. Investigators later revealed they'd found diapers and toys around the body with the same clothes Evelyn had on when she was reported missing.
All right, so we'll start some background on Evelyn. She was only 15 months when she died, so obviously there's not a ton of background on her, but we'll get into background on her family as well. So according to her find a grave entry, Evelyn Mae Boswell, she was born on November 21st, 2018 in Tennessee to parents Megan Maggie Boswell, who was 17 years old when Evelyn was born, and Megan's boyfriend Ethan Perry, who was 19 years old at the time. So He was believed to be Evelyn's father for a long time. Originally, he thought he was told he was Evelyn's father, but he's not. But we'll get into that later. But
we only learned that now during the trial, like as the investigation was ongoing. And I didn't even realize, like up until I went through all the trial information, that he wasn't the father. So while this was ongoing, everyone thought Ethan was the father.
Yeah. And not that it matters, but Evelyn was a very, very cute baby, big blue eyes. Like, I'll always remember the little pictures of her on the missing and information wanted posters. She was very, very cute.
Yeah.
So growing up, Megan, she is the mother of Evelyn. She spent time in the foster care system. When Evelyn was born, Megan was still in foster care because her mother, Angela, was in jail on drug charges. So Megan had a pretty tumultuous childhood, it seems, as well. I mean, she was only 17 when Evelyn was born, so she kind of still was a child. By 2019, Megan was living with her father, named Tommy, at Boswell Sr., and two of her younger siblings. Ethan and Megan were not together at the time that Evelyn disappeared, and Ethan didn't have custody of her. Megan was actually seeing another man named Hunter Wood at the time. So Evelyn was around 15 months old at the time that she was reported missing in February 2020 by her grandfather, Tommy Boswell. Law enforcement made a statement and said that Evelyn was last seen by certain family members near the end of November 2019 and the 1st of December 2019.
Just one thing just to add quickly before anyone comes at me. I know I said before that she was 15 months old. She was 15 months old when she was reported missing. So she was likely 13 or 14 months old when she died, just to clarify that.
Yeah. She was little.
Yeah, she was tiny.
Evelyn was said to be 2 feet tall, 28 pounds, with blue eyes. So many people questioned why at the time there wasn't an Amber Alert issued, and the Sullivan County Sheriff's Office said, "We realize that some may question why an Amber Alert has not been issued for the child. Criteria for issuing an Amber Alert are established by the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation, and this case does not meet the criteria for an Amber Alert to be issued." Because usually the stipulations are like,
they need a vehicle.
You kind of need to know where, who could have taken them, need a vehicle, need a person at least, something.
A suspect.
Yeah. With Evelyn, there wasn't really any direction to go.
Yeah.
But.
And obviously, they started the investigation a few months behind the eight ball. Like, it wasn't like she'd been missing for a day, she'd been missing for months by this stage. I guess they had
no
idea even where to start. No.
Mm-hmm. So regardless, the TBI did end up issuing an Amber Alert anyways, just to get the information out and get her photo out there. So there's varying reports of the last date that Evelyn was known to be alive. As mentioned, some reports said November, December. But then the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children said that Evelyn was last seen specifically on December 26, 2019. And a babysitter also said that she saw Evelyn on December 10th or 11th. So always a red flag when that happens, when it's like, we don't really know when she was last seen exactly, and it's like the span of a couple months, a month.
I feel like it wasn't the 26th. I feel like it was that the 10th or the 11th was probably the last time that anyone actually saw her. I don't know. I still can't find out where they got the 26th from, but I feel like it was earlier in December.
I can't decide if I'm remembering it from a different case or what. It didn't have something to do with Christmas and like her opening presents. But it was, like, on the phone, so she probably wasn't actually there.
Yeah.
I have a vague memory.
This is a case that we followed in our group, and we had a blog for it kind of in real time as it was happening. So when I went back, I was reminded of a lot of parts of the case that I had forgotten. But, yeah, that's still one thing I can't quite figure out.
Yeah. So after Evelyn was reported missing, Megan started talking to the media, and she changed her story multiple times depending on who she was speaking to. And I was just saying to Olivia before, I forgot how much this dumb girl talked to the news, like, a lot. She talked to the news a lot, gave different stories often. It was kind of ridiculous where I was like, girl, like, please calm down.
For someone who managed to cover up the death of her daughter for nearly 2 months, or, you know, over 2 months in the end, she had a lot of time to get a story straight, and she still didn't do that.
Yeah, a lot of this, it seems like pure luck that she was able to get away with anything for so long, because not to be rude, but I guess I can be rude, because she did kill her child. But she just seems very dumb.
Yeah.
So first she said that Evelyn was with Ethan. Then she said that Angela, which is Evelyn's grandmother and Megan's mother, had the child and that she was refusing to return her. She also said that Angela gave Evelyn to someone who she would be safe and have a better life with. So that's already three different stories. And it reminds me of Casey Anthony. How Casey Anthony was like, no, she was like with the babysitter who was like supposed to keep her safe. And she ran
Zanny
away
the
with
nanny.
Her.
Is that what it was? Zanny the nanny.
Yeah. Then she also told reporters that the family had a meal together and that Angela had driven off with Evelyn, supposedly to a campground in Virginia. And this is a quote from her, so it's going to sound dumb. It says, I told TBI where to find her in Mendota. My mom took her to a campground in a silver camper, and if they don't go tonight, I'm going to find her myself because I've told them they're not really, like, taking it seriously, and if they don't go tonight, I'll go myself and get her. They're not taking me seriously. TBI isn't because I've not fully told them. I've been like, hey, like, my mom camped out in Mendota, you know, to go check them out. But I've never been like, hey, specifically, hey, she's like in a silver camper because my mom did threaten me, like, you know, if I told anybody. I'm not going to get into that, but she did. I hope I read that good. Well,
that's exactly how she would have said it. Like, all the likes,
I tried to channel her. I'll add in some clips, too, because I know they exist.
Tell me about the last time, though, that you saw Evelyn. Tell me what you guys did and when that was.
We went to go out to eat, and then my mom came and got her. She was wearing a little hot pink tracksuit with a matching bow and little matching shoes.
And was this December 20, like, right after Christmas?
A little bit before Christmas. My mom, like, you can ask her, is a very vindictive, manipulating person. And yes, she basically, like, threatened me the whole time that she was gone.
Do you know who has Evelyn right now?
She dropped her off somewhere in Mendota at a silver camper. But my mom would always say the person, not, like, people, plural.
So there is a person that has her in Mendota.
They're not taking me seriously. TBI isn't, because I've not fully told them. I've been like, hey, like, my mom camped out at Mendota, you want to go check them out, but I've never been like specifically, hey, she's not your silver camper, because my mom did threaten me, like, you know, if I told anybody. I'm not gonna get into that, but she did.
So your mom has had Evelyn the whole time, or the whole time,
or the person that is in Mendota has had her the whole time.
Tell me why you let your mom take care of her. Did she take her from you that night? And
well, she was just supposed to babysit her.
You had to go to work,
because I was going to work.
And then when did you know that something was wrong?
Well, whenever, like, she picked me up Wednesday, and I told her, like, hey, they're doing a press release about the Amber Alert thing, and then she freaked out, and that's why they couldn't find her. Like, nobody talked to her for days until they arrested her. She just kind of, poof, gone. But she kept trying to take me to Mendota, and I kept asking. I was like, are you taking me to Evelyn? And she would never tell me yes or no. And I was like, well, if you're not, I'm just calling somebody in the police station to come and get me. Like, I'm not playing these games with you.
And so tell me, the day that you dropped her off with your mom to let her babysit, was there anything off about your mom that day? Did you have any suspicion that she was going to take your child?
No. Well, I called her, and she was just like, oh, she's safe, like, you know, that kind of thing. And then she started threatening me, which, like I said, I'm not getting into, like, everything she threatened me with, you know, because I'm just not, but
obviously now that you believe you know who has her, what do you have to say to them?
To just bring her back. I just want her back. That's all I want. I've been so long without her, and I know a lot of people are like, oh, why didn't you report it missing earlier? Because my mom threatened me, and I just want her back. That's all I can think about, is how much I just want her back.
Police searched the alleged area and, of course, found no sign of the child there. Another story that Megan told was that she had left Evelyn in the care of someone she trusted while she was at work. That's the Casey Anthony part.
Yeah.
And she said, well, the reason I didn't report her or anything was I knew the person who had her, and I didn't want them to run away with her. And as soon as they thought anything was going on, they kind of just vanished. So I just kind of worried, you know, about where they're at, what they're doing with her at this point in time. In a way, I knew that as soon as anything went down, this person was going to disappear, and they have. And they've tried to find them. They won't answer phone calls. They just kind of disappeared. Megan also said that she would probably do things differently if she was given a second chance. She said, "Yeah, I probably would have called the first day. I should have. But I just didn't want them to run with her like they have now."
This episode is sponsored by Noom. If you're like me, you may have seen a lot online about GLP-1 medication. Noom is a leader in behavior change weight loss, and they now offer Noom GLP-1, a compounded semaglutide. Noom GLP-1 is affordable. It starts at only $149. I feel like a lot of people think these type of medications may be out of their reach financially, but Noom offer a very affordable option at $149. For those that qualify, Noom GLP-1 is available and ships to your door in 7 days. Noom combines their proven weight loss program with GLP-1 so that you can lose weight and keep it off, which I know sometimes you can lose the weight. It's always hard to keep it off, but Noom's GLP-1s can really help with that. Noom GLP-1 comes with Companion, which is your guide to better and more sustainable GLP-1 weight loss, which is so helpful.
With Noom GLP-1, you get access to a doctor, a coach, and a supportive community all from within the app on your phone. Ask your care team anything and get support with medication and side effect management. Noom GLP-1 starts at $149 and is delivered to your door in 7 days. Start your GLP-1 journey today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. Noom, the smart way to lose weight. Disclaimer, not all customers will medically qualify for prescription medications. Compounded medications are not reviewed by the FDA for safety, efficacy, or quality.
Hey, are you looking for a true crime podcast to binge?
Check out True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everyone's talking about.
We've been one of the top true crime podcasts for almost 9 years.
And we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone is talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.
So Evelyn's grandfather, Tommy Boswell Sr., told the media that the last time he had seen her was on Thanksgiving. When he told his ex-wife, Angela, of his plan to report the child missing, she said, "You're going to regret this." Which I always thought was weird, and I couldn't, like, did she know? Or she just didn't want police poking around because she's also shady?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I've never really seen any clarification either on that, but it could be either of those scenarios.
On February 21st, 2020, police asked the public for assistance in locating a gray BMW that they believed was related to the case. Angela Boswell and a man named William McLeod were charged with vehicle theft. Angela was arrested in North Carolina, and she told the court that she wanted to get back to Tennessee to help find her granddaughter. She told the court, "I'd like to get back there and get the situation with my granddaughter resolved." William and Angela told the court that they didn't realize the BMW was stolen and that it had been a gift from Megan. William said, "I had no idea anything had went wrong with the car. Apparently her daughter hadn't paid for the car. Neither of us was aware of anything about that." So this is like confusing.
Yeah, it is confusing. Like, they had a car, Megan is how we say Megan in Australia, so I will try to revert to Megan. But Megan basically told police that her mother and William had taken Evelyn in this car, which is why they were looking for it. They found them with the car. I don't know. It's just a whole bunch of shadiness. And it was
like waste of time.
It was noise. That's what it was. It was noise in the case, kind of deflecting from what Megan knew was actually the truth. So yeah, it was just a weird, trashy part of the case, essentially, that kind of ended up having nothing to do with what happened to Evelyn.
Yeah, just like a distraction.
Yeah.
So Megan was asked by authorities to take a polygraph test, but she said that she couldn't because she was pregnant. Megan ended up being arrested for filing false reports on February 25th, 2020, and police searched a pond in Wilkesboro, North Carolina on February 26th, and the property there belonged to William McLeod's grandmother, Mary. On February 27, 2020, police started searching the area where Megan and Evelyn had lived, and authorities also confirmed by then that Megan was not actually pregnant, so she just didn't want to take a polygraph test and said she was pregnant.
Yeah, and also it was probably an attention thing too, like she just wanted the attention and look at this poor pregnant mother and she's lost her
daughter. Maybe she thought like she wouldn't get arrested then,
yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe it might delay the arrest, but I remember at the time when it was happening, we're like, wow, she's pregnant, and then obviously she wasn't, so...
Yeah, I remember following this one, and it was just, like, so many ups and downs, like, back and forths, new things every day. Like, it was ridiculous.
And obviously, I'm not a polygraph expert, but it says, you can take it. It says that it's not recommended to take it in the third trimester when the baby's quite active, because that might influence the results or, you know, impact the results. But it's, there's no physical harm to the baby to take a lie detector test.
But you should never take a lie detector test anyways, but I'll still talk shit about her anyways. By that point, the TBI had received over 700 tips in the case. On March 6, 2020, police found human remains in a shed on a property on Muddy Creek Road in Bluntville. The property was owned by Tommy Boswell Sr., who is Megan's father.
Yeah, Evelyn's grandfather.
Evelyn's grandfather. The remains are dressed in clothes that match the description of what Evelyn was last seen wearing. The TBI posted an update that said, "We have a heartbreaking update in the search for Evelyn Boswell. This evening, authorities found remains believed to be those of the missing 15-month-old. An autopsy is pending. The investigation remains ongoing. Thank you for your support during this difficult process." After the discovery, the authorities increased Megan's bond to the amount of $150,000. They said, "We thought it was appropriate under the circumstances to file a motion to increase bond and to have a hearing as soon as possible." And the Sullivan County Sheriff Jeff Cassie told reporters, "Every time we talk to her, her story changes. And I'm serious about that. Every single time." TBI agent Brian Fraley spoke about finding the remains during Megan's bond hearing. Agent Fraley said, "There was a body of a child, possibly a year and a half old." He confirmed that the age, size, and characteristics of the body matched the description of Evelyn. The attorney general asked what else was found there, and Agent Fraley said, "The clothing with the prior interview of Miss Boswell, the clothing described in that interview was the exact clothing that was found on this child." And the DA asked what else was found there, and the agent said, "There's various child clothing, diapers, toys, that kind of thing that would have belonged to the child." Agent Fraley also said that he found Evelyn's remains in a trash can and that her leg and foot were sticking out.
That breaking news, authorities have found remains believed to belong to missing East Tennessee toddler Evelyn Mae Boswell. News Channel 5's Jason Lamb is at the 5 Alert Center with what we know right now. And Jason, after a 2-week search for Evelyn, this was not the news people were hoping to hear.
Yeah, Emily, there's no other way to put it. This is a heartbreaking update at the end of a heartbreaking week in Tennessee. The remains were found this evening on a property. Evelyn's grandfather reported her missing to the Department of Children's Services. The property is on Muddy Creek Road in Bluntville. Deputies from the Sullivan County Sheriff's Office were searching the property when the remains were found. Those remains will be sent for an autopsy and a positive identification. The 15-month-old was reported missing a few weeks ago, but hadn't been seen since mid-December. Maggie Boswell is behind bars right now for false reporting. Investigators say her story changed many times during the investigation. Emily's maternal grandmother, Angela Boswell, and her boyfriend, William McLeod, were arrested for stolen property in North Carolina. They're accused of taking a car investigators were looking for in Evelyn's disappearance.
On March 11, 2020, the TBI confirmed that the remains belonged to Evelyn. Said, "We have a sad update to pass along in our ongoing search for answers in the death of 15-month-old Evelyn Boswell. The remains found on Friday evening have been confirmed to be those of the little girl." Ethan Perry, this is the father, not father, but thought he was the father at the time, also released a statement at the time, said, "Our focus has always been Evelyn and now on the investigation and bringing all of those responsible to justice. We have complete faith and confidence in law enforcement to do just that." The Boswell family released a statement on March 12th saying, "The immediate Boswell family, excluding Angela Jones Boswell."
It's funny. It's not funny, but it's so, they're making it very clear they want nothing to do with Angela.
Yeah, they're just like, not you.
Yeah.
"The immediate Boswell family, excluding Angela Jones Boswell, of Evelyn are in anguish and grief over their loss. It's been a very rough and trying time for everyone at this time, they do not want to speak publicly in regards to the tragedy. They're still trying to process what has happened. They ask for the media and the public to respect their wishes. They need more time to grieve privately." I do remember at the time, we haven't really talked much about like the other family members, but it did seem like the rest of the family even like, you know, aunts, cousins, whoever, like more immediate but more distant family, like they were very much active and trying to find her and being involved.
Yeah. Just still blows my mind that a child can be missing for that long before anyone notices or anyone does anything about it. I know that what you're saying is true. Once they realize, they did kind of try and help, but it's wild to me that that long kind of lapsed before anyone does.
Yeah. I mean, as we go on, it does seem like she had the perfect excuse for a while, being like, oh, no, she's with her dad. She's with her dad.
Yeah.
But then after a while, people started being like,
what's going on?
We haven't seen her for months. So on August 19th, 2020, Megan was charged with 2 counts of felony murder. She was indicted on 19 charges, including 2 counts of felony murder, aggravated child abuse, aggravated child neglect, tampering with evidence, false reporting, abuse of a corpse, failure to report a death, and her bond was set at $1 million. So this was a very slow case to progress. It happened during COVID, which likely didn't help things. Everything was delayed, so I know when we were talking about doing this episode, and even when I just saw she was going to trial, I was like, I forgot about this case by now. Like, it's been so long.
And her trial date was set and rescheduled a few times. Like, I think it was first meant to happen in 2022, and then it just kept getting pushed out and pushed out, and finally 2025.
Yeah. Her attorney, Brad Sproles, said, I've not been able to speak with her recently. There have been some COVID issues at the jail, so we're somewhat limited in our ability to talk to folks up here. But I've spoken with some of the sheriff's officers. In the next few days, they're going to try to make arrangements, maybe where I can talk with her by video. In 2022, TBI Special Agent David Gratz testified that Megan told him Evelyn died after her boyfriend, Hunter, rolled onto her while they were sleeping. Agent Gratz said she was aware Evelyn was dead. We also learned some information then about where Evelyn was actually found. Agent Gratz said that her remains were found in an old playhouse of Megan's. So it's like a
wooden.
It's kind of like a shed, but it's like a kid's.
I feel like Tommy built it for thing. I've read. But it's we would call it a cubby house. But yeah, basically where you'd play with your dolls and have a kitchen and stuff like that. It's just kind of a. I think they were using it more so as a shed these days. Like it had a lot of junk and rubbish piled up in there. But yeah, the original use was a playhouse.
Yeah. We only learned Evelyn's confirmed cause of death in 2022. Dr. Dorinka, she has a very hard last name to say, so we're just going to call her Dr. Dorinka, who is a forensic pathologist, said the cause of death was asphyxia in 4 places, ruling her death as a homicide. The doctor refuted the statement that Megan had made about the cause of death, saying Evelyn was too old at the time of her death to have died in such a manner, and the environment was not conducive to that type of death. According to the doctor, there was a mechanical obstruction to Evelyn's airway in the form of foil, and a blanket had been tightly wrapped around her head. I thought the same thing. Like, I don't know a ton about babies, but I'm like, I'm pretty sure if 1-year-old to 15-month-old is too big where you'd accidentally roll over and smother them.
Yeah, I would agree. The baby you'd think would be moving. I understand that, you know, newborns are it's a different story, and that does happen occasionally. But a child who is probably walking, I just feel like it would be very, very hard for that to happen.
Yeah. Even my nephew, who's 8-9 months old right now, way too big for that to happen too, I would think. And not notice. Even if you're like, I'm such a heavy sleeper, like no way. So Evelyn had been placed in a trash can and was left to die. And the doctor said this was another form of asphyxiation because obviously you can't breathe well when you're stuffed in a trash can. Photos of the remains were shown in court, and this upset Megan. She appeared to cry during the proceedings. The doctor explained that the photos showed Evelyn's positioning in the trash can. Her body was placed in such a way that it caused further asphyxiation. She described the way in which the toddler was placed as an unnatural folding of the body. The doctor also described some of the photos as showing a blanket wrapped tightly around Evelyn's head. She also explained that due to maggot activity and decomposition, they were unable to determine if blunt force trauma was a factor in Evelyn's death, but that her skeleton didn't show damage. So Megan's trial date was first set for September 2022, but that didn't happen.
So we're now going to get into the trial portion of the episode. The trial went for a week. We have tried to pick out the main points to cover. Obviously, if you've listened before, you'll know our podcast format is we do basically one case a week and 1 hour summary of the case. There are a lot of sources online that you can look at. Court TV is a really good one. There's another media outlet called WJHL. They did day by day, really, really, really comprehensive recaps. If you want to read the witness testimony of every single witness, they did call a lot of people within that week. So what we've tried to do is pick out the most important parts and the parts that kind of led to the outcome and the, you know, what, yeah, led to the outcome of the trial. So we are summarizing the trial. We will not be getting into, you know, every sentence that every witness said. We've tried to summarize the main bits.
Yeah, and with trials, a lot of the witnesses, it's a lot of redundancy because it's kind of just like trying to prove a certain point by having multiple people say it. Yeah. So we're just going to go through like the main parts.
There was a lot of repetition too. Like a lot of people had the same types of stories. The same themes were coming out with a lot of the witnesses, obviously, which is why they're probably called. So we've just kind of summarized to give you the overview of the trial.
Mm-hmm. So the trial finally started on February 5th, 2025, which was just a couple weeks ago in Sullivan County, Tennessee. And it ran for a week. Prosecutors were seeking life in prison without parole for Megan. And there are some crime scene photos online if you want to look at them.
I just clicked on the link. The link's broken. But yeah, they did release a lot of graphic photos. Well, when I say graphic, there was photos of things that were found with Evelyn's body. No, but like the blanket that she was wrapped in, the foil that we mentioned, which we'll get into. So there are quite a lot of those type of photos if you're interested in learning more.
Yeah, and the whole scene is pretty grimy, so that kind of adds to just like how horrible
like
it is.
It was squalor and filth, and that's what Megan was living in as well. So
So after jury selection was complete, the state began their case by saying that Evelyn would now be 6 years old if she is alive. So that's great. Like, that's how long this has taken.
Yeah.
Prosecutor Amber Massengill said of Megan, she failed her in the worst possible way. Months passed. We're not talking about weeks. We're talking about 2.5 months this child is missing. We also learned very early on in the trial that Ethan was not Evelyn's biological father. Amber Massengill, the prosecutor, also said the defense's biggest believable story that really is probably what kept the family from reporting earlier is she was saying that Evelyn was with her father, Ethan Perry. And you'll hear a lot about Ethan Perry, and you'll get to hear from Ethan Perry yourselves. Ethan Perry is actually not Evelyn's father, but Megan led him to believe that he was the father. So we end up not even knowing who the father is, right?
No, I was just going to clarify that. As far as I can tell, I've read through all the testimony, like all the things. It's never, ever been clarified as to who the father was. I don't even know if Megan knows who the father is. I don't know. But no, we only learn that Ethan was not the biological father. We don't learn anything else as far as I can see from all the research.
The prosecution alleged that after Evelyn died, Megan started dating her boyfriend and she went on trips with him. Amber said, all while her child is upside down, decaying in a trash can. Several jurors were seen to cry during the opening statements. During their opening statements, the defense claimed that the state's theory is reasonable doubt in and of itself. They don't know what happened, they don't know how the child died, and they can't prove how the child died. Megan's attorney, Jean Scott, spoke about how they believed Evelyn died. Said, "What the state hasn't talked to you about is the possibility of what if this was accidental? What if Megan or Hunter Wood rolled over the child in bed?" He also spoke about Megan's age and immaturity being the reason as to why she didn't report the accidental death and why her stories frequently changed. He said, "I would certainly call 911, but I'm not 18 years old. Did she lie to the police? She absolutely lied to the police. I'm not contesting that." So she said, again, an 18-year-old girl, scared to death, talking to a TBI agent, talking to a police officer and trying to explain this. She doesn't want to get in trouble. It doesn't mean she murdered her child. It doesn't mean she killed her child. I feel like you're really discrediting 18-year-old girls here, but
okay. Yeah. This episode is sponsored by Noom. If you're like me, you may have seen a lot online about GLP-1 medication. Noom is a leader in behavior change weight loss, and they now offer Noom GLP-1, a compounded semaglutide. Noom GLP-1 is affordable. It starts at only $149. I feel like a lot of people think these type of medications may be out of their reach financially, but Noom offer a very affordable option at $149. For those that qualify, Noom GLP-1 is available and ships to your door in 7 days. Noom combines their proven weight loss program with GLP-1 so that you can lose weight and keep it off, which I know sometimes you can lose the weight. It's always hard to keep it off, but Noom's GLP-1s can really help with that. Noom GLP-1 comes with Companion, which is your guide to better and more sustainable GLP-1 weight loss, which is so helpful.
With Noom GLP-1, you get access to a doctor, a coach, and a supportive community all from within the app on your phone. Ask your care team anything and get support with medication and side effect management. Noom GLP-1 starts at $149 and is delivered to your door in 7 days. Start your GLP-1 journey today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. Noom, the smart way to lose weight. Disclaimer, not all customers will medically qualify for prescription medications. Compounded medications are not reviewed by the FDA for safety, efficacy, or quality.
Hey, are you looking for a true crime podcast to binge?
Check out True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everyone's talking about.
We've been one of the top true crime podcasts for almost 9 years.
And we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone is talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.
TBI agent Brian Fraley was the first witness called by the state. He spoke about the search and investigation into the case, and he confirmed that Megan gave multiple different accounts of where Evelyn was. He also spoke about finding Evelyn's remains. This info about his testimony is from WJHL. Several of the photos depicted Evelyn in a state of partial decay among trash as she is removed from the trash can. Fraley testified. Okay. He said aluminum foil appeared to be wrapped around her head, which was in a backwards position and situated abnormally. He also pointed out several insects in the photos that could be seen among the trash. He said the foil around her head appeared to have been formed around her. It did not take long to remove the foil from her head. He described finding bodily fluids consistent with decomposing. Additionally, Fraley said investigators removed a fleece blanket and a onesie that Evelyn had been wearing. Megan cried in court as the photos of Evelyn's body were shown. On day two, the court was shown a video that was taken on February 25th, 2020. In it, Megan spoke about waking to find Evelyn not breathing. She said Evelyn's eyes were open, but were not bloodshot or bruised. She also said Evelyn was not cold when she found her. Megan said that she attempted to give the baby CPR, but failed. In that interview, Megan told police that her boyfriend had taken Evelyn's body and that she didn't know what he had done with the remains. She said she wrapped Evelyn's body in a blanket because she didn't want her to be cold. Agent Fraley testified again on the second day and answered questions about how Evelyn was found and about the investigation. Over a dozen witnesses were called during the trial. Many of them gave similar statements about the investigation and evidence. So the first witness was Tommy Boswell Sr., Megan's father and Evelyn's grandfather. Tommy spoke about Megan's childhood. He also spoke about their living situation at the time that Evelyn disappeared. He said that he'd been supporting Megan financially at the time. Megan and Evelyn lived with Tommy for a few months. He said that Megan did not clean or contribute anything to the household, so he asked her to leave. He said that Megan went to live in a trailer park that is owned by their family, and Megan was given a trailer and didn't have to pay any bills. Megan moved in with Hunter Wood at one point, and Tommy told her that she needed to move out of the trailer so that it could be rented out. He said the trailer required heavy cleaning after she left, and part of the floor needed replacing. He said he met Hunter for the first time after Christmas 2020. He said that Evelyn was not with them at the time, and Tommy found that strange, but Megan told him that the child was with Ethan. Tommy gave evidence about the area where Evelyn's body was found because it was his property.
Yeah.
The second witness was Austin Feller. Austin lived at the same trailer park as Megan in 2019. He was living at the park for free as he was doing maintenance there. He spoke about the state of Megan's trailer when she left, and he described dirty diapers, feces on the ground, waste in the fridge and oven, and other manners of filth being inside. He said he'd been forced to use a respirator to enter the trailer due to the stench. Austin took photos of the trailer and was asked in court why he did so, and he said, just because it was the worst thing I've ever seen. He told the court he sent the photos to Tommy Boswell and others to show the state of it. The third witness was James Lewis, who is a supervisor with DCS. He spoke about the referral he received to look into Evelyn's whereabouts. He testified that when he asked Megan where the child was, she said that Evelyn was with Ethan. Megan did not give DCS any way to contact Ethan. Megan told James that she did not have a crib or any child-related items as they were elsewhere. Megan told DCS that she and Ethan had broken up in November 2019, and she said, I don't know what's going on, and I want to know what's going on. Okay.
There was a lot of back and forth in the trial with different witnesses because basically when they went to investigate Megan, there was not enough supplies that would have indicated that a child was living there. So that's why it mentions that basically she didn't have a crib because they were elsewhere. Like a lot of people were like, well, where's all the stuff for the baby? And she didn't have anything.
Right. The next witness was Casey Saltz. Her parents had been Megan's foster carers, and Casey worked at a pediatrician office, and that was where Megan had taken Evelyn there for wellness visits. And she testified that Evelyn was not taken to her 12-month pediatrician appointment. And Casey reached out to Megan via Facebook, asking her why they didn't attend. And Megan said that she had gotten the dates mixed up. So Casey rescheduled the appointment for her, but then Megan claimed that she was working on the new date. Eventually, Megan would tell Casey that she was actually just switching to a closer pediatrician.
So the next witness to testify was Dr. Barbara Pugh. She's a now retired pediatrician, but she had 37 years of experience, and she was Evelyn's pediatrician. The doctor said that Evelyn regularly attended visits, but the last time she saw her was in October 2019 when she was 10 and a half months old. Evelyn was said to be healthy and advancing well at that point. Another friend of Megan's, Bailey Hawkins, testified. Bailey said that before Thanksgiving 2019, she never saw Megan without Evelyn. In the text between them in December that year, Megan spoke about her relationship with Hunter. She also told Bailey that Evelyn was either with her grandmother or Ethan's grandmother and that Ethan was trying to get some type of custody of Evelyn. So this, like, even she's starting to tell varying stories to people in her life at this point, even with her grandmother, Ethan's grandmother.
She can't keep up with her own lies at this point.
Bailey told the court that she had a text exchange with Megan on December 23rd where Megan told her Evelyn was doing good. Megan also told Bailey that she was pregnant. So that's the story that she kind of started around that time. Bailey repeatedly asked to see Evelyn and Megan would always make excuses. Bailey said by the end of January 2020, she was worried. Megan was no longer posting photos of Evelyn and she would only speak about her if someone else brought her up. After Evelyn was reported missing, Bailey asked Megan why she had not told her about what was going on, and Megan said that she was worried that whoever had Evelyn would do something to her. On the day three of the trial, the defense called for a mistrial. This happened after the DA's office showed a piece of evidence with an error on it. The evidence was a picture of messages between Megan and a witness and included additional wording that was the result of the prosecution copying over text to a different format. The DA's office argued that it was just human error and the judge agreed and said that he would not call a mistrial.
I love how in so many cases over any small thing, the defense is just mistrial.
Like it didn't change what the relevance of the evidence. They were just looking for any reason to get out.
Yeah.
So Bailey took the stand again that day. She said that she didn't notice any signs of abuse ever on Evelyn. That's kind of an ongoing theme. A lot of people said that Evelyn, up until November, December, Evelyn was well cared for, you know, that no one had any real reason to suspect in terms of physical abuse that anything much was happening.
Yeah.
One friend of Megan's, Caitlin Carter, took the stand. She said they met in middle school and they reconnected with Caitlin when she was in Megan reconnected with Caitlin when she was in college. Caitlin said that she met Evelyn four or five times and that Megan and the child were always together. And she last saw them in early December at a Chili's restaurant. Caitlin is one of the first witnesses to kind of mention by that point Evelyn was slightly neglected. She said that Evelyn looked dirty and she smelled. Megan sent Caitlin photos of herself and Hunter later that month at an aquarium without Evelyn, which you think would be somewhere that you would take a child. Obviously, they could be on a date or whatever,
yeah,
they were kind of newly together. But you think that a child would enjoy the aquarium. But there's a photo that was shown in court.
Why would you send
of them? Yeah.
Why would you send that picture of like you and your boyfriend to your friend? I get it if like the kids in it, like, oh, look at us. But I feel like it's weird to send them just you and your boyfriend at the aquarium to your friend.
So Megan also told Caitlin that the child was with Ethan. She said that Ethan had claimed emergency custody. And Caitlin said, quote, she said that Ethan had saw photos of Evelyn with bruises on her forehead, which is why he claimed the emergency custody, apparently. Megan's foster mother, Gail Kite, was the next witness. Gail said that Megan was 17 years old and was 7 months pregnant when she went to live with their family. Gail kind of supported what most of the other people said, that Evelyn was developing well and that Megan took her to all necessary appointments. Gail also said that her sister Sue Whitson babysat for Megan a few times. In December 2019, Megan told Gail that Evelyn was with Ethan and that they were splitting custody. She said that Megan seemed fine about this. She didn't seem upset or concerned. Megan contacted Gail in January 2020, which Evelyn was likely deceased at that stage, and said that Evelyn was doing well. Sue Whitson, who was Gail's sister, also testified. She said the last time she babysat for Evelyn was in December 2019. She said that Evelyn was very healthy, but once she had a horrible diaper rash. Sue said, "I'd never seen a diaper rash look that bad." Every time Evelyn was dropped off, Sue did say that the child was dirty and that the child would, that Evelyn would also smell of urine when she was left with her. So that kind of indicates she was left sitting in her diaper for a very long time, often. So there are reports that she was maybe being neglected, not so much abused, but neglected.
Yeah, it all seems like neglect.
Yeah. The next witness was Erica Stacey. Megan had dated her son Caleb in spring 2019, even though she told people that she'd broken up with Ethan in November. This was obviously happening earlier. So again, another varying story. Erica spoke about giving Megan some clothing for Evelyn. She made a birthday shirt for her first birthday. Around that time, though, Megan told Erica that Evelyn was mean as something. It says expletive, so we're not entirely sure what she said, mean as whatever. So telling your boyfriend or ex-boyfriend's mother that your child is mean, your 15-month-old is mean, is a very strange comment.
Ridiculous.
In January 2020, Megan told Erica that Evelyn was with Ethan. She said that Megan seemed happy about this. Again, fine, no worries. The next witness was Randy Wood, and he's the father of Hunter Wood, who was Megan's boyfriend around the time of December. He said that he first met Megan when she applied for his job at a business, which was a restaurant called Hunter T's Chicken Shack. Megan started working there on December 2nd, 2019, and Hunter also worked there. There's a lot of questions about why Hunter didn't testify. Obviously, his, you know, insight and knowledge would have been quite important, but Randy said that Hunter was unable to testify due to mental health issues and that he'd been in a facility for 2 months. He said that Hunter's mental problems began, quote, when he got accused of being a baby killer. Hunter has since been diagnosed with schizophrenia, and Randy has said that Hunter does sometimes not recognize his own family. Randy said he talks about things, you know, sometimes you don't really know what he's talking about. I mean, I don't know how to put it. It's just sad. I mean, this young man was a 4.0 student in school, and I don't even know if he's ever going to function in his life again, which is horrible because it seems now that we know likely what happened, my theory is that Megan maybe wanted to be with Hunter. She just got sick of Evelyn. I feel like they were only together for, you know, a few months, and his life has now been destroyed because of it.
Yeah.
Ethan Perry also testified. That was Evelyn's apparent biological father. He spoke about how he had dated Megan for years. And Megan told him that she was pregnant in spring of 2018. He said at first he believed he was the father, but he soon began to doubt it. And I find it quite interesting because the statement that we mentioned earlier, where I'm just paraphrasing, but he said basically our focus has always been Evelyn and, you know, we hope for justice. When he testified in court, he basically told the court that he had nothing to do with Evelyn.
Never seen her?
No, I think he saw her literally once. It says that he met her in 2019 when she was toddling, so she would have been around the age of one. He said he was surprised when DCS reached out to him in February 2020. He was asked by investigators about Evelyn's whereabouts. He said that he cooperated fully and he's allowed investigators to search his barracks and his home, and he went through interrogation for hours. A DNA test was performed, and it was at that point that it was determined that he wasn't Evelyn's biological father. He reiterated to the court he'd only ever met Evelyn once. He said that she seemed clean and healthy. Ethan's grandfather, Carl Perry, took to the stand and he basically confirmed everything that Ethan had said, and he gave some more general information about the situation. Lieutenant Michelle Gilliam of the Sullivan County Sheriff's Office took the stand next. She was working in the Criminal Investigation Division, specializing in child cases at the time that Evelyn died. The lieutenant said in some of Megan's stories, they didn't add up, they didn't make sense. Megan told the lieutenant that Ethan had had Evelyn since Christmas Day. When she was asked where Evelyn was, Megan said, "I have no clue." And the lieutenant said to her, "You seem totally unfazed by this." The lieutenant also spoke about the shed slash playhouse where Evelyn was found. She said there were several baby items, including stained baby clothes, bibs, toys, diapers, baby bottles, a stained blanket, and a stained child swing.
Seems like she just kind of threw any baby stuff she had in there with Evelyn.
And I feel like it was stained. Like, I don't think anyone's saying that it was stained with blood. I feel like it was just stained because Megan was filthy. Dirt. She didn't clean anything. She lived in squalor. Like, the photos it's horrible.
It's disgusting.
Yeah. So other members of law enforcement also testified and spoke about what they saw. They all recounted the different stories that Megan had told them. You know, some of them she told that, you know, whatever, we went into them earlier, you know, the ones where she was with Angela, where Angela had taken her to the campground, where she was with Ethan. She told everyone a whole bunch of different stories. On day 5, TBI agents continued to testify. Agent David Gratz spoke about the evidence found at the scene, and there's also some photos which we've put on the blog. There's one photo of him holding out the piece of foil that was wrapped around Evelyn's head. It's quite well preserved. Like, there's a little rip in one of the kind of pieces, but it's essentially still one solid piece of foil. They also showed photos of the blanket that her body was found wrapped in. There's some photos of the playhouse. It's literally just like a hoarder where you've shoved anything, no order to it. It's just like basically a dump refuse.
Yeah.
He also showed the onesie that Evelyn had been found wearing. So he's seen in court holding that up. There's also photos of the trash can. I think Evelyn may have been in the trash can during the photos, but they have blurred out anything. Like, you can't see. You can see the blanket and the – it doesn't even – I guess it is. It's a white kind of plastic trash can. I was thinking originally it would be more like a metal trash can, but it looks like a white kind of plastic trash can. This episode is sponsored by Noom. If you're like me, you may have seen a lot online about GLP-1 medication. Noom is a leader in behavior change weight loss, and they now offer Noom GLP-1, a compounded semaglutide. Noom GLP-1 is affordable. It starts at only $149. I feel like a lot of people think these type of medications may be out of their reach financially, but Noom offer a very affordable option at $149. For those that qualify, Noom GLP-1 is available and ships to your door in 7 days. Noom combines their proven weight loss program with GLP-1 so that you can lose weight and keep it off, which I know sometimes you can lose the weight. It's always hard to keep it off, but Noom's GLP-1s can really help with that. Noom GLP-1 comes with Companion, which is your guide to better and more sustainable GLP-1 weight loss, which is so helpful.
With Noom GLP-1, you get access to a doctor, a coach, and a supportive community all from within the app on your phone. Ask your care team anything and get support with medication and side effect management. Noom GLP-1 starts at $149 and is delivered to your door in 7 days. Start your GLP-1 journey today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. Noom, the smart way to lose weight. Disclaimer, not all customers will medically qualify for prescription medications. Compounded medications are not reviewed by the FDA for safety, efficacy, or quality.
Hey, are you looking for a true crime podcast to binge?
Check out True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everyone's talking about.
We've been one of the top true crime podcasts for almost 9 years.
And we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone is talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.
There's also some photos of the trailer where Megan and Evelyn lived, and it's disgusting. It's just filthy.
It's gross, yeah.
Yeah. So the court had to have a recess at this point as a juror felt ill due to the smell coming from the evidence that was presented. So by now this stuff is all 5 years old. It's obviously got, you know, it's never been cleaned. It's evidence. So there's decomposition on it. They had to have a recess because the juror wasn't well. Some members of the media also spoke, and they spoke about the stories that Megan had told them. Jake Quaintance, who was News Channel 11's news director, as well as Keith Weiss, who was news director of WCYB-TV, were called to the stand. Jay spoke about interviewing Megan and recalled what she'd said about Evelyn. She said that Evelyn was sweet and loved everyone and that she loved Baby Shark. And in one interview, Megan said, "I just want her back. That's all I want." On day 6, Paul Durant, who was special agent with the FBI, was called. His role in the case was to review interviews, notes, and digital devices. He told the court that over his career, he had got evidence from around 30 phones and 20 computers. Paul got information from Megan's cell phones, and he also executed social media warrants on her accounts. He told the court about Megan's communications. This info about that is from WJHL. It says, in later text messages, Megan tells the woman that she is struggling to pay for something due to an ongoing custody battle with Evelyn's father. There's a January 13th, 2020 conversation with Ashley Rosenbaum. Megan claims she lost custody of Evelyn to Ethan, who was thought to be the father. There was another conversation that we mentioned earlier, and she told the person that Evelyn is doing good but is mean as and claims Evelyn hates her. Messages between Megan and her boyfriend Hunter where they talk about the case were also discussed in court. It says, Dad won't let me go anywhere because of the situation. Hunter, I can't disclose stuff to you on here about what the TBI is doing.
Yeah, I can't read his side.
Yeah, because his is blue, so it's quite hard to decipher. But basically, she's talking to Hunter and saying that she can't tell him stuff via text. Law enforcement agents also spoke about the analysis of blood and DNA that was found at the scene. Dr. Matrina Schmidt, who's a forensic pathologist, testified about going to the scene to help remove Evelyn from the trash can. She told the court that after the autopsy, she determined the cause of death to be homicidal violence. She also said that positional asphyxiation could have occurred as Evelyn was placed upside down in the trash can, and that asphyxiation could have also been caused by the blanket. The doctor told the court that she had performed around 3,600 autopsies in her career, and it was in her opinion that Evelyn did not die in the co-sleeping incident as alleged by Megan and the defense. During the autopsy, it was also discovered that Evelyn had a heart defect, but the doctor basically shut down that that had anything to do with her death. They said that there was no symptoms. It didn't contribute to her death in any way. The doctor told the court that she wasn't able to determine if Evelyn was still alive when she was placed into the trash can, but that it was her opinion that Evelyn had been alive. Dr. Dorinka, who we mentioned earlier, also testified during the trial. She said that it was her opinion that Evelyn's cause of death was asphyxiation by homicide, and she said that she agreed with most of Dr. Schmidt's determinations in relation to the causes of death. Dr. Dorinka went into more detail, though, about how Evelyn was placed into the trash can and how it could have caused her to asphyxiate. She said it was clear that Evelyn had been intentionally tightly wrapped up and that her body had to be unfolded in order for an autopsy. On February 12th, both sides rested their cases. Megan never took the stand. The only time the court heard from her was during the taped interviews that happened in 2020. She never spoke. She didn't testify in her own defense or anything like that during the trial. Her attorney spoke about the reasoning for that. Jean Scott said, we gave it a lot of thought and at one point we were leaning towards it. But after the medical examiners testified yesterday, I don't feel that the state's proved their case, at least the cause of death, and we don't feel it necessary. Jean also moved for a judgment of acquittal and went through the info with the judge without the jury in the room. Jean said, as it relates to the first three homicide counts, the state has failed to prove the cause of death, which is required to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. I understand the burden here is that the state has to prove it in a light most favourable to the state, but the court has to look at it from that standpoint. So the judge denied his request and ruled that the jury should make a verdict on all of the charges that Megan was facing. So during the state's closing arguments, Amber Massengill spoke about how Megan had essentially mummified Evelyn and had thrown her out with the trash. She said Evelyn mattered and she deserved to grow up. She said she failed her daughter. Amber Massengill said there were parts of the case that would likely never be known, but there was enough evidence to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Megan was guilty. She said Megan Boswell should not be allowed to go on as if Evelyn never existed. The defense tried to play out that there'd never really been any evidence of abuse of Evelyn prior to her death. And Jean Scott also tried to play up the role that Hunter had in the death. He said, I'm not saying Hunter killed that child, but I'm saying he did dispose of the child. He went on to say, should she have called and reported it regarding Megan? She absolutely should have. I told you that in my opening statement. Have they proved she's a liar over and over? They have, and I won't deny that. They haven't proved she's a murderer. Jean said, I don't have to prove this case. I wish I could, but I can't. You can't prove a negative. What I can tell you is the state has not proven their case. They've not proven the cause of death. They've not proven the cause of death was an unlawful killing as opposed to an accident or rolling over in bed or some kind of health-related issue. They haven't proved that, which I feel is such a ridiculous statement based on testimony and evidence. But anyway.
It's like they're really grasping at straws here. But
So on February 13th, the jury returned with their verdict. They had deliberated for around 4.5 hours after the closing arguments. Megan was found guilty on all three first-degree murder charges she faced in the death of Evelyn. She was also found guilty on all other charges, including aggravated child abuse and aggravated child neglect. So the sentencing phase of the trial began. Angela Boswell testified and spoke about Megan's troubled childhood. Megan's attorney asked Angela, "These problems, do you feel that is partly your fault, the problems that Megan has experienced?" And Angela said, "Absolutely yes. At her core, she's a generous, kind-hearted person. All Maggie has went through, Maggie still has potential. She was trying so hard, she didn't repeat my mistakes. Maggie learned from my mistakes and she was trying to do better with Evelyn. You know, she wasn't repeating it. I think she just got saddled just because my mistakes that she did those and that was not it. That was not the case with Evelyn." Megan's foster mother also testified at the sentencing and spoke about how Megan was a great mother. She said that she didn't think Megan was irredeemable and that she deserved a chance for parole. Megan again chose not to testify during the sentencing phase. So the jury ended up deciding on a sentence of life in prison with the possibility of parole. This means that Megan will serve 51 years before she's eligible for parole. So now she's in her early 20s. That would mean she'll be 70s, you know, early 70s, maybe before she's eligible for parole, late 60s, early 70s, mm-hmm. depending on if that credit time served.
Yeah.
After the sentence, Megan's attorney asked the court to dismiss the charges or to grant her a new trial. He said there was insufficient evidence in the record to support the defendant's convictions, and he goes on to list all the charges that there wasn't enough apparent evidence for. He also claimed multiple false reports violate the protections against double jeopardy in the US and the Tennessee constitutions. He said to the media, "It's a sad case. I know I've been criticized a lot in the media because of defending Megan, but everyone's entitled to a defense, and that's what I hope I provided her, and I tried to do the best of to the best of my ability." So I can't really find a clear answer on what happens now that he has requested that this, you know, the charges and the convictions get thrown out. Johnson City defense attorney Chris Bird, though, did speak about what will likely happen next for Megan. He said she appeals to the Court of Criminal Appeals and then the Supreme Court. This is what his actual quote, but he said, "That's the once that's done. She's got ineffective assistance of counsel and that's about it. It's not like the things that are built in with the death penalty claim or a death penalty sentence that are all the protections that you have are not there." So after the trial concluded, law enforcement officials released a statement. I feel like a lot of law enforcement people took this case really personally. Even the TBI making the original statements about finding the body, they were all very personally affected by, I guess, the way that Evelyn was murdered, the way her remains were found. Mm-hmm. Sullivan County Sheriff Jeff Cassidy said, "In February 2020, baby Evelyn Boswell captured our hearts and became one of our own. Sullivan County Sheriff's Office detectives, along with our state and federal partners, worked tirelessly to find her and build a case against the person responsible for her death. I want to express my sincere appreciation to all who worked on this case. Thanks to their thorough investigation and to the hard work of our district attorney's office, Megan Boswell was found guilty of all 19 charges against her, including the first degree murder of her daughter. Today, justice was served for our baby Evelyn." The TBI director, David Rausch, also issued a statement. He said, 5 years ago, we began working alongside the Sullivan County Sheriff's Office, the FBI, and the Office of the Second Judicial District Attorney General to pursue justice for baby Evelyn. Today, justice was finally served. Every single person who worked on this case should be commended. It was both challenging and heartbreaking, but they never wavered from their mission to ensure the person responsible for Evelyn's death was held accountable. So I know that was a long kind of recount of the trial and the legal process. I feel like in this case, justice was absolutely served. I guess, you know, we know essentially what happened to Evelyn. The main thing that is still up for discussion is the motive. Megan has never really said, you know.
What exactly happened.
Yeah, yeah. I suspect that Megan just had had enough. She was a teen mother. She had this new boyfriend who she liked. Evelyn was just too much of a pain and a hassle for her, so she wanted to get rid of the baby and thought that maybe, you know, by giving the stories about Ethan and Angela having the baby that she could get away with it. I just feel like she just wanted Evelyn gone.
Yeah. I wonder, like, Hunter? Did he, like, ever see Evelyn?
Because she started working at the Chicken Shack, I think they said December 2nd. So that is when she met Hunter because he was working there, I believe, at that point. So
yeah, like, did she just keep the baby hidden and that was the problem?
I wonder if she told him. Obviously, he can't testify because he's unwell, but I wonder what she told him, if she told him the baby was with Ethan.
Did she even say she had a baby? Did she just totally lie?
I think that she must have told him, because in the text she's like, I can't disclose to you what the TBI are asking me. So true, I'm assuming he knew that she had a baby, and whatever story she gave him, he went along with. But in saying that, they were only in a relationship for a very short amount of time. Even if they were in the relationship up until the point where Evelyn was reported missing, it was only a few months. So I guess, you know, her stories would have been believable for that amount of time.
Yeah, and I agree. It seems like, just judging by the state of her trailer and everything, she didn't want to take care of a baby. She couldn't hardly take care of herself, it seems. Like, she wasn't very good at being responsible, keeping things clean, taking care of things, being an adult, it seems. And I get that she seems like she also had a difficult life, which does probably factor into her behavior, but I don't think it factors in enough where, like, she knew what she was doing was wrong and she could have gotten help somehow, some way. I know it's easier said than done, but I mean, she murdered a baby.
I feel like, too, like, Tommy has said that he was supporting her financially. He let her live in the trailer, then he made her leave. Like, I feel like she had support up until the point, basically right around the time where Evelyn died. So maybe that was just the catalyst. She's like, well, now I have to move out of the trailer. I want to be with Hunter. I just have to get rid of this child somehow.
Yeah, and then I think her lies just kind of got out of control and she couldn't even keep track of them. She comes off very unlikable in the interviews she's done. It's just,
I know she was young too at the time. Like, I'm not standing up for her in any way, but I know she was young. She was very immature, very...
Definitely.
Yeah. She just seems like a bit of a brat, really.
Yeah. So that is it. That is the whole story.
Yeah, I guess there might be an update eventually if she does appeal, or, you know, if something does happen with her charges. I don't know.
I don't see any of that happening.
No. Or if it does, it's probably going to be drawn out again. And I guess you have to try and appeal if you've got nothing to lose, don't you? But I just feel like the prosecution did a really good job in this case. I feel the defense did as good of a job as he could have done based on, you know, what information.
What he was working with.
Yeah, with all the different stories, the evidence that was found. He did the job that he should have done, but it wasn't really going to be. I would have been absolutely totally shocked if this trial would have ended differently.
I feel like even he wasn't that into it, because at the end when he was like, you know, everyone deserves a fair trial, and that's what I tried to do.
He's like, yeah, I did my best.
Yeah. He's like, I don't want to defend her either.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that is it for this episode. It was a long one.
And so this episode was really long. We are having next week off. Just, we've got a few things going on. We're going to do some planning and prepping for the rest of the year. So if you do want an episode, we are releasing one on Patreon next week. So make sure you go over there and check us out. It's like around $1 a week. You get an extra episode, ad-free content. We have a really great community over there if you're looking for an episode next week.
Yes. Everything will be on the blog, truecrimesocietyblog.com, if you want to see any of the clips or anything.
Crime scene photos as well are on there for this case. Yeah.
The disgusting trailer. If you check us out on Instagram, that's where we're always posting news and updates, True Crime Society. And if you want to see what we're up to, my Instagram is stephsum_Olivia's TCS Olivia. Olivia just did the Patreon plug, so I'll skip that, but check us out on Patreon for more ad-free content, please. And all the usual stuff, rate, review, subscribe, whatever. Make sure you're following on whatever platform you listen on. Leave us some nice comments and share to your Instagram stories is a big help. Just get the word out there, please. We love that. And that's it. I'm very tired now. It's been a long day. I feel like you could probably hear my voice like going downhill as we've recorded, because I'm like, I can't even speak anymore.
Yeah.
So thank you guys for listening. Stay safe out there. Peace out.
See ya.
military veterans, and active duty service members. You could become a certified cyber warrior with just 12 weeks of training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, and IT pros with these skills often enjoy abundant opportunity and a great lifestyle. Protect our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. SkillBridge and other VA benefits are available to those who qualify. Learn more at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP. That's mycomputercareer.edu/CWP.
Hey, are you looking for a true crime podcast to binge?
Check out True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everyone's talking about.
We've been one of the top true crime podcasts for almost 9 years.
And we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone is talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.